Hello guys, Abel here. Welcome back to another video. As you can see, I'm in flying colors, maybe because I'm a flying Dutchman. I am warming up for the World Cup. I'm really looking forward to it. To be honest, I know that I shouldn't, because in the summer I will be super sad that there is no World Cup. But hey, I can't help it. World Cup is coming, so I'm excited. The Netherlands is not going to be my number one preferred team. They will be maybe second, so I will be very happy if they win the World Cup. But my number one this time is Argentina. This is probably the last World Cup of Leo Messi, and I would be very happy if they won the World Cup, or if he won a World Cup more specifically. Just anybody, but not Portugal, to be honest. If Ronaldo with his Portuguese team won the World Cup, that would be a disaster. No offense, Portuguese people, you have a great country, so I would be happy for you. You know what, I would be happy if you won the World Cup, but only if Ronaldo is not playing. If he wins it, for the rest of my days, I would be seeing reels about Ronaldo, that Man United disrespected Ronaldo, but so, see, like, he proved the haters wrong. I'm a Man United fan. So that is not something I could be dealing with. But anyways, in today's video, I would be doing a bulking tier list. Basically, a hierarchy of importance when it comes to bulking phases, lean gaining phases, or any kind of gaining phases. I did one tier list video on muscle building, so training stuff. Then I also did one on fat loss, so I think it's only fair that I do one on bulking. Now, bulking is a bit more of a controversial topic than fat loss, let's say. So I think there is more of a room for disagreement here. Differences in interpretation of, you know, evidence, scientific or anecdotal, I think that comes into play much more so here. So I'm open for discussions over some things. I do think that most of the things on this tier list are fairly established. So if I rendered something highly important on this list, I think it's generally fairly well agreed upon that that is indeed fairly important. Maybe if I rendered something overrated or not so important here, there is more disagreement to be expected there. So feel free to share your opinion or potential disagreements, of course. Feel free to deflect my counterpoints, because I will be defending my stance and you will defend yours, and that's all good. With that though, a couple of words about the list itself. So I collected 16 items on this list, which doesn't seem like a lot of points. It seems like, man, surely there are more things to talk about when it comes to bulking. That's true. I didn't want to put on super trivial things on this list, okay? So for example, I didn't really mention supplements here, let alone specific supplements. So I'm not going to be talking about a test booster. A test booster is overrated for building muscle or for bulking. I will be more so talking about things that are commonly mentioned around the whole bulking topic. And within that, I will try to dispel some myths or at least help you contextualize a couple of things. So for these 16 items that I'm going to be talking about, I created three categories. I have the overrated category, which obviously are things that or often talked about, and some people do consider these things highly important, and I just don't think that they are. And I really think that if you never even really knew about these things, I think you could still be having a very, very productive bulking season. I also have a category called worth thinking about, not worth getting stressed about. So these are things that are relevant, so it's good if you know about these things, but these things are definitely not the maker or breaker of your bulk. So if you focus a lot of your energy and focus on these things, then you could be overlooking other things that are way more important. And of course, in fitness, we do this all the time. We miss the forest for the trees. So I would say that these things are more relevant than the things that I put in the overrated category. But I would still say that if you never knew about these things, you could still have very productive bulks. So just so you know that. And then I have kind of a, I just named this, where does this fall? Because I could sort of put them in the worth thinking about, but don't stress about these things category. And I could also put them in the important category. It kind of just falls in between, or maybe I could even put them in the very important category. So actually including this category, I have four total categories, not three. Then I have the important category. So these are things that, yes, they are important. So you should know about it. And these things and your thought process over these things should influence how your bulk goes. And then I have the very important category, which is like the previous one, but it's even more like that. So it's very important. One other thing I should mention on this list before I start listing things is that not everything on this list is physical. So some things have to do more so with psychology, because I also do think that that's very important to talk about. So just before anyone gets annoyed here, not every single item on this list is a to-do item that pertains to your gym or kitchen time. Okay, so with that out of the way, though, let's get into the list. So I'm going to be starting with the overrated category. So we will go in the order of less important to more important things on this list. And the first item we have here is the P ratio, or I could also say being very lean at the start of your bulk. I wanted to start with this item because I think it's very important to contextualize this. And so if someone turns off the video midway through, at least they will have seen this. So there was all this talk for a very long time, and to some extent it still goes on today, unfortunately, that the leaner you are and the leaner you start your bulk, the more productive that bulk is going to get. And then basically with every percentage of body fat that you add to your frame, the less productive your bulk is going to become and the less muscle you're going to gain proportionately. So relative to the total weight that you're gaining, more and more of that is going to be body fat and less of that is going to be muscle. I think there are legitimate reasons to question even this whole premise, but unfortunately this theorizing didn't stop here, because the body fat ranges themselves that were mentioned were also just ridiculously low. I have heard figures like, okay, up until about 12% body fat, your body is in the ideal spot to build muscle. Over 12% body fat, it's not so great. So then go back to 8% body fat. Other times, the more classic figure was 15%. So 10 to 15% is the ideal body fat range, or 8 to 15%. I rarely heard anything over 15%. If someone mentioned 17% body fat, that could still be okay as a top body fat percentage for a bulk. That was already considered to be like, oof, like, is this a Ripito fanboy? Like, what is this guy doing? Luckily, at least these days, I'm hearing figures like 10 to 20% body fat as a good kind of cutting and bulking range, which I think is much, much more reasonable. But I think a lot more generally, the reasons to think about your starting point as far as your body fat percentage when you start your bulk, and then how fat you should get when you end your bulk, I think that these are things to think about for practical reasons. You have probably things that you will want to do with your physique. Will you want to go to the beach in the summer? If so, realistically, how lean will you want to be when you do that? A lot of people have little vanity goals like this, and I think that's completely fine. Then when you think about this, you can create a bit of a timeline. Okay, how many months away is your vacation? 4. Okay, so in 4 months, maybe this is not the time to hit your all-time peak body weight and maybe body fat percentage, because you want to be a bit leaner for the summer. So you can take that into account. These are the things that you should be thinking about when you think of how lean you should be when you start your bulk, and then how fat you should be getting at most at the end of your bulk. I can tell you that what eventually halts a bulking process and what eventually gets in the way is not that the P ratio, so the muscle to fat gain ratio, got so unfavorable by the end that it was just not viable. What usually makes people end their bulks is that what they see visually is just not reconcilable with the timelines that they have for their year. Even if there is such a thing as a body fat percentage at which you can no longer gain muscle effectively, you would almost certainly want to end your bulk before that anyway, even if you're not particularly fat phobic. Okay, the next item in the overrated category is the fat to muscle ratio and stressing over what that's going to be. So will I be gaining a 2-to-1 fat to muscle weight, or will I be gaining a 1-to-1 ratio of fat to muscle? The answer is, inter-individual variability is huge here. I would say that if you're gaining an appreciable amount of muscle on your bulk, that's fantastic, because a lot of people cannot say that they have gained any muscle in their recent past. So if you gain some muscle, I would say be glad for that. The amount of fat you gain with that is only relevant insofar as how it lines up with your timeline, once again. If you have something in the relatively near future that makes you very interested in looking super lean with your shirt off, then that's going to be your priority anyway. And in that case, even if you didn't gain too much fat, I mean, you would have to gain a lot of muscle for you to be happy with that in that moment because you want to get lean. Conversely, I mean, if for a long time you have nothing that makes you particularly stressed over looking lean with your shirt off, then if you want to gain muscle and you have gained muscle, let's say you gained 2 kilos of muscle, does it really matter if you also gained 7 kilos of fat with that? I mean, of course, eventually you will want to diet that off probably, but those are 2 kilos of muscle, which are basically yours forever. Of course, you can lose that muscle as well, but once you built it once, that muscle memory will always make it easier to regain that muscle. So that's 2 kilos of muscle that basically nothing can really take away from you. Muscle building is hard, it's slow, it's inconvenient, a lot of things get in the way. You're 2 kilos further ahead, so cherish that and don't stress over what the ratio is. Think about, you know, absolute amounts. If you have X amount of fat that you gained, you will want to take that off, or at least part of it you will probably want to take off at some point. So you don't want to make that too logistically inconvenient for yourself. But stressing over this ratio, I mean, who can really tell what's an ideal ratio is, really? A lot of people document their cuts on social media, on YouTube, so we can have good ideas over what's realistic, what's too fast, what's too slow, what's a good amount of strength or muscle to maintain during a cut. Like, we have a lot clearer ideas over these things. Very few people document their bulks, you know, very closely, where you can see all the details. You just hear anecdotes from people that, like, well, in 2015, I did a bulk and I gained a lot of fat and a lot of muscle, but it was worth it. Or, well, yeah, so I gained a lot of muscle and a lot of fat, but I would do it differently. Now I would not gain any fat by my ebook, that sort of thing. So it's hard to do a lot with these anecdotes. The research on this is virtually non-existent, so don't obsess over ratios. If you want to build muscle, focus on building muscle. If you have managed to do that successfully, fantastic. With regards to fat gain, that will once again be capped by either your annual kind of timeline or by some sort of cap that you set for yourself. Either visually, maybe you will always have some kind of a visual cap that you just won't be willing to exceed, so you will never be willing to completely let go of your abs, for instance. Some people have that, or maybe you actually try to quantify your body fat percentage somehow with a DEXA scan or something, and you will set a cap for yourself there. These will be the things that determine what happens with your body fat. The success of bulks ultimately is really measured over multiple months. If after multiple months you got stronger, and more importantly for us now, bigger, then your bulk was successful. Okay, next one is another big pet peeve of mine, is the perfect calorie surplus. So should I be in a calorie surplus of 100 calories or 150 or 200 or 250? Here's the news flash for everyone, and I'm telling this, I wish I could tell this to my past self. I'm seeing these videos over, you know, 5 things I wish I knew when I started lifting. This is definitely something, because I have spent whole afternoons trying to estimate the perfect calorie surplus and what that should be. The thing is that, for one, we don't know. I mentioned this before, but Eric Helms and a couple of other guys have this research, like, review paper over the perfect calorie surplus, or the ideal calorie surplus for bulking. It's a long article, an interesting article, all kinds of interesting figures are there, which maybe you want to know about. But the big conclusion at the end is, we don't know what that is. So maybe 200 to 300 calories seems reasonable, maybe closer to 500 for a rank beginner. Probably that's the most reasonable answer I could give you as well. However, this is the thing. How do you know if you are in a 200 calorie surplus? How do you actually verify that? Because I can put myself now at, you know, 3,200 calories, and I can decide that, okay, like, my maintenance is 3,000, so that should be a 200 calorie surplus. For one, you can really only know your maintenance, even like ballpark that, if you have been tracking meticulously for a long time, keeping close records of your body weight through cutting periods, bulking periods, maintenance periods, take an average of all of that, an average of your energy intake, and based on that, you can get a pretty decent idea as to what your maintenance should be. A lot of people are not that meticulous. I'm certainly not that meticulous. Even if you have done that in the past, you know, things change, small things change in our metabolism, or I should say, energy expenditure patterns over time, let's put it that way. For us men, that tends to be a little bit more predictable because we are a bit more steady, I guess, hormonally and just physiologically in general, sort of year round. For women, that can be a bit trickier. But even then, energy expenditure, how much are you moving? Maybe you're living now in a colder climate, or you're trying to save on heating, so it's colder in your apartment. You're expending a bit more energy just to keep yourself warm. Whatever, I could come up with a bunch of random examples. Things could change with your gut microbiome, and your energy expenditure could be a little bit different because of that. You cannot exactly predict these things. So if you're trying to put yourself in a calorie surplus of 150, that in reality could easily be 200. It could also be 100. So you cannot exactly calibrate your surplus like this. You're not a robot that, okay, input, output, this is the exact number, this is what's going to come out at the other end. No, you will have to shoot for an intake, which is your best reasonable guess, maybe a previously verified guess, but you will have to verify it again. Nobody can exactly shoot for a calorie surplus within, you know, a 50 calorie margin. I don't think that's possible. 100 calories, like within that margin, it might be possible. So it might always be closer to 200 than to a 300 calorie surplus. Maybe some people are that meticulous. Nobody can tell me that they can be so accurate that, okay, like it's actually not 200 calories of surplus, but 150. I think that's basically impossible. But regardless, you will have to verify it in some way. And how are you going to verify it? By what happens to your body weight. What that reasonable surplus amount should be for you will be dictated by a couple of things: your preferences, goals, how fat phobic you are, good advice from people like myself, common sense from people like yourself, and, you know, other things like this. But don't fret the calorie surplus, fret the amount of weight gain, and how much of that you have per month, per week. Okay, with that, we arrived to the next category, and that is going to be the worth thinking about, not worth stressing about category. So these things are relevant, but not the end all be all sort of thing. Okay, so here, the first thing is going to be macronutrient ratios. Now, okay, if I phrase it that broadly, maybe I should put some caveats. Protein intake is important. Actually, I would say that is somewhat overrated as well, in that I think it's just not that freaking hard to get in enough protein unless you're vegan, for example. So yes, in that case, you should pay considerably more attention to your protein intake than a non-vegan should. If you're a smaller person with a slower metabolism and on very low calories, you know, as far as like absolute numbers are concerned, I don't know, let's say you're a person who needs to get by on 1200 calories, even on a bulk. Yes, maybe you do need to pay more attention to your protein intake and exactly how you're going to get that in, because you're just not eating that much food. So you need to make room for not only protein, but other things, such as things that are going to keep you full. But if you're, let's say, a man eating 3,000 calories or more on a bulk, I just really don't think that you're going to be at a very high risk of not getting in enough protein. Protein is in everything, not just in meat and dairy and eggs. Even if you're eating pasta and even non-starchy veggies, you're gonna get some protein in a, let's say, 3,000 calorie meal plan or any kind of diet setup. It's pretty likely that you will get at least very close to the minimum recommended protein intake for lifters. So I think even protein intake is somewhat overrated, but less so. The carb and fat ratio, I think, is even overrated during cutting, when calories are fewer, and yes, sometimes you do need to pay a bit more attention. So for example, you don't want to shift in and out of ketosis when you're cutting, because like that can be terrible for appetite management, can be terrible for your energy levels and mood. When you're bulking and you're eating a lot more food than when you're cutting, at least the risk of this happening is much lower. So that's one thing. Secondly, I'm hearing a lot of things about very high carb, very low fat bulks and things like this. I think that the theory behind seems solid. I think if we really think about it, I think even the theory itself is on very, very shaky legs. In some cases, I think it actually doesn't make sense at all. I think that for enhanced lifters, this makes more sense because, you know, they are using things like insulin, which makes very high carb diets a lot more effective. I believe that there is some interesting synergy between insulin and growth hormone. So if you're an enhanced lifter using growth hormone, maybe it makes that even more effective as well. So there can be edge cases like this. However, I think that netty lifters, we just don't really see this huge benefit. Yeah, like netty lifters do eat higher carb diets, But usually higher carb diets just mean eating carbs and not being on a low carb diet on purpose. If you're just eating kind of foods that people generally tend to eat and you keep your calorie intake in check in some way, either behaviorally or actually tracking your intake, that will usually mean that you're on a moderate fat, moderate to high carb, moderate to high protein diet. Whether you're eating 30 grams of carb or like, let's say 40 grams of carbs more and 20 grams of fat less, or vice versa, I would be highly surprised if really anybody could notice the difference in that. Of course, like placebo is a real thing, so it's a little bit iffy listening to people's anecdotes, but I think if we just look over the wide landscape of what people have been doing for decades, if not a century by now, I think we would have seen if like really, really high carb, low fat diets or some other extreme would have produced miraculous differences. I think just eat food, try to eat healthfully, and don't try to go for any sort of ridiculous extreme, and you're going to be fine. And I would also say that if you're setting up your diet like this, like reasonable food choices, not doing any kind of things with your food behaviorally that very apparently would skew your diet towards some very extreme sort of macronutrient ratio, I think if you just do that, then tracking your protein intake, loosely at least, and having some sort of a cap, either behavioral or some actual quantified cap on your calorie intake, just having those two things would basically take care of everything, and just sweating these macronutrient ratios really won't make a difference. And yeah, by the way, when people talk to me in this kind of language, like, yeah, so I'm on 150 protein, 80 fat, and 240 carbs, even when clients do this, I admire them so much that they are willing to think in these three numbers instead of just saying a calorie number and just knowing that they hit their protein intake because it's just routine. I don't say anything. I just obediently bust out my phone and I do the math on a calculator. But what I want to say is, dude, like, talk to me in human language. Like, just tell me a calorie number and that's it. But yeah, anyway, so protein and calories are more than enough, I think, for most people. But anyway, let's move on to the next thing, which is mini cuts. So again, this is a cool thing to know about, and I actually do use this quite a bit. I will say that there is nothing magical about them, and you can perfectly well execute a wonderful bulking period without doing any mini cuts. I think they can be nice, and they can be implemented strategically. However, I think for one, it's important not to abuse them during a bulk, and also not look at them too much as a way to hack the system. So I think what a mini cut is good for is, for one, getting rid of that little bit of unnecessary fat gain, which to some extent will always creep in, either because we just overdid the weight gain a little bit, maybe because we just strategized not so cleverly, or more likely, because what always happens, will happen, is that not everything will go according to plan. You aimed for a certain weight gain amount per week, but, you know, a social event crept in here and there, and, you know, you just gained more weight than what was necessary. So it's good for that. And also, eventually, you will do some cutting period eventually anyway. So you can sort of front load some of that during the actual bulk itself. So you will still gain weight, you will still gain body fat, and you will still end up at a net higher place on both of those fronts at the end of your bulk, but you just won't have to undo so much of the fat gain this way. Now, again, if you're not crazy with how much weight you're gaining, then it will be much, much less necessary to begin with. And secondly, it's just important to see the limitations of these mini cuts. So what a mini cut is not for, and what I think a lot of people secretly still wish that they were for, including myself, I did this all the time, is that, okay, so I'm going to gain, let's say, a kilo a month, and let's say like a third of that was muscle, which you cannot know, but let's say you somehow could, I'm going to lose 0.7 kilos of fat at the end of the month. So I'm just going to be going for pure muscle gain, just pure lean mass gains. No, it won't work like that. And there are a number of reasons why it won't work like that. But as I actually elaborated on this on my previous bulking video that I did like a month ago, body fat gain is not even something that you want to hack too much. I actually think that gaining some body fat over the course of a bulk is a stimulator of muscle growth itself, or another permitter of muscle growth. Just like how we say that nutrition itself is not driving muscle growth, it's just permissive of muscle growth. I think the same thing goes to some extent for body fat. It's a theory of mine, but I think that theory stands on some not super, super shaky grounds. And I talked about this in more detail in that video. But yes, I do think that if you're trying to hack the system too much and you're trying to get away without basically any fat gain, you're actually going to reduce the effectiveness of the bulk. So the goal is not to get rid of all the fat that you're gaining, it's just to get rid of the redundant amount of fat gain that that happened. So basically, I think an ideal setup in which mini cuts are incorporated into a bulk could be something like you gain for 2 months, you gain 2 kilos, and then you do like 10 days of cutting. And in that you lose, let's say, a kilo or something like that. You know, I don't think that you should be going for like a month of cutting. Ideally, I think it would be even more infrequent than that, because I think there is such a thing as bulking momentum. But it could be, for example, 2 months, so like 8 weeks, 10 weeks of gaining, 2 weeks of cutting, 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that of cutting. And when you're cutting, I also don't think that it should be like a protein sparing modified fast, like eating 1,000 calories because now I'm going to crash diet. No, I think when you're doing these mini cuts, you should be losing fat maybe a little bit more aggressively than you otherwise would, because like it's so short. But I don't think that the goal should be like the absolute maximal amount of fat loss and the most amount of starving I can take for 2 weeks. No, like it should be maybe something more aggressive than what you would do if you were cutting for 4 months and not 2 weeks, but not something ridiculous. And I should also emphasize that by the time you're done with your mini cut, you should still be heavier, of course, than what you were at the start of your bulk. So if you gain some very small amount of weight and then you undid all of that with a mini cut, I mean, you know, what are you doing? Like, how are you going to gain muscle if your body weight is not going up? Okay, the next thing on this list is training periodization. Again, I think it's cool to be aware of this, but some people just create too much of a mystical vibe around these things that, okay, when you're cutting, you should be doing this. Well, okay, when you're cutting, volume often does need to come down a bit just because you cannot recover as well. But some people go so far as to say that, okay, like your rep ranges should change like this according to what kind of a nutritional setup you're having. Things are much too individual to make statements like this, for one thing. And secondly, I also think it's just trying to put lipstick on a pig. So I think when you're bulking, fundamentally, the only thing that changes is that you're a bit more anabolic than normally, or hopefully much more anabolic than normally, and your recovery is better. So that means that you can probably train with higher volumes, or at least there is more of a chance that you will benefit from higher volumes. You're probably also a bit more resistant to injuries in that state. So if you wanted to experiment with higher training volumes, I think this could be a time to do it. If you're deep into a cutting phase, for example, I'm not a big fan of just, you know, experimenting with higher volumes just to see how it would work. I mean, you know, you're in the final 2 weeks of your cut. I mean, how do you think it will work? If this amount of volume was not working super well, it's unlikely that just increasing your training volume a bunch now is going to make you bust through this plateau. No, it's probably just going to make it more difficult to recover. However, when you're bulking, that could be the time. You know, even if you're not plateaued, it's not like something is not working and you're trying to fix something, maybe you are progressing fine. And you just want to play around with, okay, can I include a few more sets for this muscle group? Can I progress even faster? I think that could be a cool idea in these cases. I've had very mixed results with this, I should say. My experience is that if progress is good on moderate volumes, then going for higher volumes often is just basically undetectable what's really happening. And the only thing that you can detect often is that you're just getting niggled more often. Like, the more work you're doing, the higher the chances of having some overuse issues, overuse injury issues, which often is not the end of the world. But, you know, strength gains, which are not the goal, but they are one of the best metrics that we have, those are at best identical. Like, you won't really gain strength even faster because now you're doing more volume. If anything, you're gonna gain strength slower or at best at the same rate, which I would say is good if you're gaining strength at the same rate. That's often as rosy as it gets. If it's the same rate of strength gains, then maybe you can be quite optimistic that, okay, I'm probably building muscle faster. But building muscle faster, I would say that building muscle is cool, and faster muscle building is often just not detectable, whether that's actually faster. However, the niggles often come more frequently this way. But, you know, that's my experience. Often I have seen some more positive case studies in this regard as well. But yeah, you can experiment with higher volumes. And I would say that that is the main thing that changes from bulking to non-bulking. When you're not bulking, but just kind of maintaining, main gaining, whatever, then, you know, you can still experiment with these things. But the point is that I just really don't see any good justification for having specific training phases dedicated to bulking. That like, okay, I'm going to do higher reps or lower reps or this or that. No, basically just train like you did up until that point. And just know that if you want to be a bit more hardcore, that's probably the time to do it because your recovery is optimized as far as nutrition is concerned. Okay, the next point is something that I have touched on before, and that is your timeline. And it is relevant to think about this because ultimately that is going to influence most people's decisions around bulking. When do they want to start a bulk? When do they want to end it? How long they should make it? How much weight are they willing to gain per month? What is their cap as far as body weight and body fat percentage is going to influence all of the decisions that you make around these things. So in that sense, thinking about your timeline and having a nicely planned out kind of strategy for maybe the whole year or something like that can be a really cool thing. However, it's also an overrated concept, and for the following reason: it almost never ever works out in the exact way that you planned it out. Basically never. There are a lot of commonalities that I see with clients. I used to think that it's only me, but it's always nice to see that others are similar in this way. But what I tend to see is that when people are done with a cut and they are nice and lean, they are fired up and they love planning. That's when they have the highest propensity or inclination for busting out spreadsheets and notebooks and plan things out. And they love creating timelines that, okay, so this is where I'm at now. This is my body weight. This is my body fat percentage. This is going to be my body weight and body fat percentage by this date. This is going to be my cap, and I'm going to go there this and that way, this and this many weeks. Surplus is going to be exactly this. My strategy around eating out and social events is going to be this. It's going to be amazing. Then often, even though I tell them this, it still shocks them oftentimes that, you know, like the first week they realize that, oh, like actually I planned on gaining like 5 kilos this next 5 months. I'm actually halfway there in the first week because you ate more and your gut is more full and you're retaining more water. Like I tell them this, but they don't listen. Aside, you know, silly things like this, things just don't work out the way you think. Like in the beginning, you're really excited about being super meticulous and super slow and conservative and everything because you want to hold on to your leanness. Of course, you just attained it. You're attached to it emotionally. As the weeks pass, you realize that, okay, like the world didn't stop spinning because I'm lean. I don't have like 10 more girls asking or begging for my phone number at least my Instagram handle at my doorstep every day. So basically you just become a little bit less excited about being as lean. And then also you start realizing that, well, okay, like I was very excited about this so far because I was pursuing the goal. Now that I have it, it's again a little bit less exciting. And also you just start becoming a lot more aware of the downsides of being so lean. So like the cognitive dissonance starts to kick in a little bit. Eventually you want to ease that cognitive dissonance. And usually people do that by realizing that, okay, maybe it's just not worth as much. Maybe I can be a bit more relaxed. It's not the end of the world if I gain a little bit of body fat. And you know, a couple of weeks, months, whatever amount of time down the line when they are up X number of pounds and X number of body fat percentages, they are not so attached anymore to that leanness. Like it's far enough behind them so that they can let go of it a little bit. They become a little bit more relaxed. And then they realize that, okay, like that timeline that they planned out for themselves, it was just pulled out of their asses. They had really one goal, and that is being lean for as long as possible. And it would also be nice to eat more. Could I do both of those somehow? Well, maybe this bulking timeline will be perfect for that. It wasn't. It just appealed for you at the time. Things have changed. And this is something, I mean, you probably heard me if you watch my stuff regularly. I said this a number of times. The perfect setup, the perfect plan is overrated. Let's try that again so that I don't run out of air. It's overrated. A simple plan that makes sense is perfectly good enough to start with, and be okay with the fact that it is going to change. And that's okay, because it's going to change because of your preferences, because of things that you could not foresee. And it's good to be adaptable, and it won't be nearly as hard to be adaptable as you now think. So it's completely okay to change what you had in mind at the get-go. Be okay with that, and let that bring you some ease and peace of mind that you don't need to have the perfect plan from the get-go. You will want to have it because you're neurotic, because you're lean, but it shall too pass. With that, we have arrived to the next category, and that is, again, a bit of a bonus category, because it could either fall in this previous one, which is like kind of overrated, kind of not, or the next one, which is going to be the important category. This one is called, where does this fall? Because I'm not really sure. It could kind of go either way. I'll tell you where it falls for me, and then it may fall wherever you want it to fall for you. So the first thing is a relatively consistent surplus, as opposed to having boluses of surplus intakes during the week and then more days of not having a surplus. So for example, is it the same if you have, let's say, 1400 calories of surplus on Sunday, and from Monday to Saturday, you have no surplus at all? Or maybe you have a 2000 calorie surplus on Saturday, and for the other days of the week, you have either maintenance or a deficit day. Is all of that the same as having, let's say, a 200 calorie surplus on 7 days of the week? I really shouldn't be using surplus numbers here, because I just bashed on the whole surplus idea before. I should be saying something like 3,200 calories on 7 days of the week, or, you know, 6,000 calories on one day of the week, and then, you know, much less calories on the other days. But it's easier to conceptualize it this way. It's probably not the same. That's the answer. So it is better if you have a more consistent surplus. So insofar as we can quantify this, it's better if you have, let's say, 200 calories of surplus on 7 days versus like having 6,000 on one day and then a deficit on the other days. Probably the more consistent this surplus is, the better. Now, of course, because we cannot actually ensure this surplus, we can only go by, you know, calorie numbers and track them down. That's why, by the way, I do say usually that a tracked bulk is better than a non-tracked bulk. So, and actually I totally forgot to put this on the list. So I'm just gonna spoiler it now. I should have put it somewhere here in the important, or maybe to the kind of important category, tracking your calories. That's actually a good thing during a bulk, because going by feel and by feel putting yourself into a surplus is actually very hard, if not impossible. So the best bulks are tracked. I will say this. The reason it's good to track your calories when you're bulking is because really you only need a bit of a surplus day to day in order for you to be like anabolic enough for muscle building. Again, like, we are not going to get into the whole surplus discussion again, but ideally what I would do with a client is I would try to estimate their energy expenditure with some reliable calculator. And then, you know, I would prescribe them a daily intake, which I would presume to be a given surplus. And then, of course, we would like go by weekly and monthly weight gain amounts. If I saw with the client that, okay, like he's gaining a kilo a month, let's say, and a quarter of a kilo per week, that's great. So that's the number one thing for me. Oops, am I spoiling things here? Oops. But then if I know that, okay, every day he is eating roughly the same amount, then that would help a lot as well, because I would know that, okay, like the surplus is clearly happening because he's gaining weight, but I know that it has to be at least somewhat consistent unless his energy expenditure is like this, like just fluctuating like crazy, which is rare. So that's why consistent surplus, consistent intake really is what we are going for, and ensuring that the surplus is actually there. How big of a deal is it if that surplus and that intake is not consistent? So how bad is it if you have like one day of the week where your calories are much, much higher, and then, you know, other days when you're compensating for that, and then the weekly and monthly surplus is clearly still there, and we can verify that with the weight gain? How suboptimal is that? It's hard to tell, and obviously it all moves on a spectrum. If you're in a pretty significant deficit for 6 days of the week, and then you have a binge day, one day of the week, that's probably pretty bad, because most of the week, you're actually doing the best you can to be as catabolic as you can to make up for the binge. So how could that be optimal for bulking? If you have like 2 days of a smaller indulgence and then 5 days of making up for that, still not optimal, but, you know, less suboptimal than the previous setup. If it's like 3 days of indulgence and then 4 days of making up, still a bit less suboptimal. So like it all moves on a spectrum. And I would say that if we can just use common sense and think of like, okay, people indulge because that's just what people do. But with common sense, we can sort of know what's a reasonable versus a ridiculous amount of indulgence. If we just use those kind of common sense metrics and we said, okay, we indulge once or twice a week, but it's not too horrible. And otherwise, we are not like starving ourselves. I think we quickly get to a point where it's probably not a very significant difference, at least not for, you know, like intermediate lifters where like really like 1% differences can make or break things. The reason I say this is because what we see anecdotally as well is that most people are not super meticulous. Most people don't eat the same exact food every single day, track down, very consistent intake. We see that people do indulge, yet still a lot of people build muscle successfully. What all those people do, however, is that they all gain weight. So the weight gain part is non-negotiable. However, this very consistent intake thing, it's great. The more consistent we are, the better. But I don't think that we need to be like so optimally consistent with things to have close to optimal outcomes here. If that was the case, then we wouldn't see that, you know, people with decent enough genetics and hard enough work and definitely with the weight gain that's there are succeeding on bulks. And we definitely see that they are succeeding with it. And I also say that it is kind of overrated because I really don't want to put the bar so high. I think unless we are obligated to, I think it's just good not to stress over these things so much because being so consistent with our intake is very difficult. It can be done more so during a cut because you're not going to be cutting for that long, but bulks take a long time. Since they take a long time, I think it's just unreasonable to expect perfection. Like you cannot live life like cutting, even though now you're bulking. We just cannot expect the same level of constant self-restraint and self-monitoring 24/7. And again, since I don't think we are obligated to be this optimal, because that's just not what we see in the real world, I will kind of consider this overrated and underrated at the same time. So it's a relevant concept, but it's not the end all be all. Okay, the next thing is the cutting to bulking ratio. I used to say that this is much more important than I say it is now. The bulking to cutting ratio is important. It definitely is relevant. I would actually call it important. If we look through like a 5-year period in your lifting journey and we see that you spend more time cutting than bulking, which does happen to people, it definitely did happen to me for many years, that's not good. And that will definitely mean for most people that you're slowing yourself down. So in that sense, it is important. It has no place even in this category. Like it is just important. However, I also think that overanalyzing this so much so that like you're exactly shooting for a given ratio is overrated. And I think if you're too obsessed over this, it can again create the same sort of needless stress that the whole P ratio created. I think if you just simply bulk for long enough, then you're largely going to be fine. The people who run into issues with this, usually they don't bulk long enough. What happens is that they start binging and then they actually stop their bulk very early. And after that, they might not lose weight, they might still be gaining weight, but that's not really bulking at that point. That's more so just like intermittent binge periods. So you could actually be kind of maintaining your weight on the net balance, maybe like on an annual average or 6-monthly average kind of basis, you could be gaining weight while you're really only in a purposeful surplus for like, I don't know, like a month at a time. That is really possible because, you know, like you can shed fat pretty fast. It just requires a pretty horrendously catabolic environment and pretty harsh crash diets, but it can be done. So like I have done this. I would diet for like 4 months, bulk for a week, then stop bulking, then kind of prepare myself to start cutting, kind of binging in the meantime. But, you know, like in another month, I would basically start my next cut. So like it was actually like a 4-to-1 cutting to bulking ratio in my case. And I still like on the net balance, I actually gained weight. So that is doable. You need to be pretty screwed up in the head for that, but a lot of us are, right? So in that sense, of course, it is important. However, I would say that if you have issues like that, your main problem is probably not getting the ratio right. It's actually that maybe you need some help or some serious self-work at least. But I think if you just ensure otherwise that you're bulking for long enough, so you're bulking for like 4 months at least, preferably more like, you know, 6 months to 8 months, something like that. I mean, eventually you're going to lose that fat in some way anyway. Oftentimes you're going to be losing that fat faster than you thought you will. A lot of you will have probably enough muscle at the end of that, that's more than what you started with, so that you're going to be happy with it. So I think it's not so much this whole ratio thing that should be put in the important category. It's simply bulking for a long enough period of time. Of course, in some ways, that's the same thing as a bulking to cutting ratio. Like, I could say, like, I don't care about the ratio, but I want you to bulk for 8 months of the year. Then, well, yeah, I guess in a way we address the ratio thing with that as well. But to be honest, I don't really care if it's at the end of the day a 4-to-1 or a 2-to-1 bulking to cutting ratio. Like, if you bulked for 8 months this year and then you take your sweet ass time during your cut, and instead of, you know, cutting only 2 months, which would make for like a 4-to-1 bulking to cutting ratio, you cut for 6 months, that's not a very good ratio in this case, at least on paper. But you bulked for 8 months, I'm not too worried for you right now, because I think you have gained a lot of muscle. If you took your time with the cut, there is more of a chance for a recomp in the meantime. I just don't want you to be crash dieting all the time. If you're not doing that, I think you're largely going to be fine. Anyways, we will go to the next category, which is the important category. Honestly, the things that I have here are probably going to be controversial. Not that I think many of you will think that these are not important things. It's just maybe I didn't put some things in the important category yet. I put these things here. But anyway, in my opinion, these are actually underrated things. So the first thing is not letting all your eating habits go to shit. Now, this does not impact your bulk directly. Like, you can have really shit eating habits. You could be eating a bunch of fast food, fried foods, a bunch of high energy density stuff, non-mindful eating, just completely let your eating habits go to shit. You could still be having a very successful bulk. However, I also like to look at the long term, and probably, hopefully, this is not the last bulking phase that you plan on having. So it's going to be much smoother if you keep at least some of those good eating habits, which most of us accrue or attain while we are cutting. At least keep some of those, you know, still eat some veggies, some fruit. You don't have to like fill yourself up with those if you have, you know, a tough time getting in your calories, but still, you know, just be in the habit of eating those. Still at least have some semblance of mindful eating, at least like have one meal or at least one snack of the day that you're eating mindfully. Do some of these things because it will be much, much easier for you then to eventually do a cut. And if that's the case, that will probably also mean that you will be leaner. So then at the beginning of your cut as well, and at the end of your cut, it will be much smoother to kind of transition between these phases that way. It can really make things a lot more difficult and just, you know, at best, oftentimes makes you waste a couple of valuable weeks at the beginning and at the end of bulks and cuts when you try to transition, and then you have these screw ups and mess ups because it's not enough to change strategy, but you also need to change habits. And that can be a tough thing. Changing habits is always a tough thing. So if you can at least keep some of those good eating habits, I think you will have a much, much smoother journey. It's not like a very practical, concrete recommendation. It's one of those things that this is not something you can do today in the gym. But I think it is important because it addresses the long term and sustainability. And the other thing that's even more woo-woo seemingly, but it's actually, I wrote jokingly, get off social media, but I just meant it's important to choose the mental nutrition that you have, or like the mental food that you're feeding on. If you are constantly bombarding yourself with Kino body videos or, you know, whatever, just super hot guys and girls on social media with their ripped bodies and perfectly defined muscles and super tight skin, it's always going to make you second guess what you're doing. If not that, maybe videos from, you know, experts and gurus like saying contradictory things. Man, that looks amazing. I want to look like that. It has a power over me, I will admit. These things are powerful, like it looks awesome, especially, you know, knowing that I have looked like that in the past. You know, I have my own pictures. I'm purposefully not looking at those right now. Well, I have to a little bit because I need to use them for some YouTube thumbnails, but for the same reason that I'm using it because it works, because more people click on my videos and I want them to click on my videos. Other people are like that as well. They are just better at it than I am. Social media, YouTube, the whole internet, that's an attention-grabbing, fighting for eyeballs type game. You need to be aware of that. They are going to be fighting for your eyeballs, and they are going to be successful at it more so when they're using these pictures that are going to tempt you. They're going to put weird ideas and thoughts in your heads. I would say the same thing goes for just educational videos oftentimes. If you have set yourself on a strategy regarding a given topic, I would say don't watch videos and listen to podcasts more and more and more about that topic, because inevitably you're going to hear some contradictory message that conflicts with what you're doing, what you thought was a good strategy. It's gonna often just confuse you, make you second guess yourself, make you perhaps inclined to jump ship. Don't do that. You have set yourself on that strategy for a reason. Don't program hop, don't diet hop. Be consistent at least for a while until you have some sort of a way to assess how well it's working. I have done this so many times. And the thing is, the deeper you are into a bulk, the easier it will be to make you second guess yourself with some like really ripped physique. When you're lean yourself, seeing Keto Buddy talking about how amazing black coffee and intermittent fasting at being at 8% body fat is, it's not as powerful because you're closer to the experience yourself. You can know it for yourself that, nah, being at 8% body fat is not that amazing. This guy is kind of full of shit. When you're at, you know, 17% body fat, you're not particularly hungry. You don't even remember very vividly in that moment the perils of dieting down to very low body fat percentages. So you're thinking to yourself, even though you shouldn't, but you do, that, maybe actually that's the real way to go. It works the other way around as well. When you're very lean, it's much easier to make the idea of bulking and eating more appealing because you're there, you're lean. That thing has not as much power over you in that moment because you have it. On the other hand, what you don't have is eating as much as you would like and probably feeling your best as well. So the message of like, oh, don't worry, just soften up a little bit, feel free to eat, dare to eat, get a bit bigger, that seems much more appealing in that moment. So our mind is very fickle and we are complex, but at the same time, very predictable and very easily influenceable because we are emotional beings. So be aware of this and choose the mental food you're feeding on very carefully. Okay, and with that, we arrive to the very important category. So these are things really that if you don't nail down, and I don't think this is very controversial, maybe one thing there or two that could be somewhat controversial. But for the most part, these are established things. If you don't nail these things down, then, you know, are you even bulking or why are you even bulking? You don't want to be wasting your time. So the first thing is progressive training. So this is something I see not very often, but sometimes, is that people think a lot about bulking, which is good, but sometimes they think about it so much that they think that they can eat themselves to bigger muscles. Sometimes they actually forget that the driver of muscle growth is still your training. Diet and being in a calorie surplus, eating enough to gain weight, that's really the most powerful tool that you have as a natural lifter, at least, to put yourself in a more anabolic state. You're not on anabolic steroids. Those are very anabolic. They are cool, but you don't have that. So you're using this tool to put yourself in a more anabolic spot. That's great, but it's still not going to put muscle on you by itself. You know, maybe if you lost a bunch of muscle before, or you never really had any to begin with, and you were on a very low protein diet and underfed, if now you go on a higher calorie, higher protein diet, yes, that will probably put some muscle on you just by itself, because protein and calories are anabolic, but they're only anabolic to a certain extent. As a person who had been training for a while, probably, who wants to get even bigger, you need that fundamental stimulus for this, and that is your training. So that is the driver. Yes, nutrition is permissive for all of this. That is creating the environment. That is creating the support system, if you will. But the training needs to be there. So fundamental characteristic, you know, we talked about what should happen with your training when you're bulking. How should it change? Well, the number one way it should change is that it's going better. You're getting stronger, you're lifting heavier weights or doing more reps. Your training should be progressive and you should be pursuing that progression. You know, you should be hitting PRs. When a bulk is going really, really well, the thing that I love hearing the most from a client is, man, like I'm hitting PRs left and right. It's amazing, it's incredible, what is happening? That is amazing. Like maybe that won't happen to you if you're more advanced. Like, I'm usually not hitting PRs like a madman. Now I'm actually hitting because like I've been maintaining for so long that really probably my muscles were screaming for some actual nourishment after being just beaten but not fat for quite a while. But you know, even if you're not hitting PRs like a madman all the time, there should be some PRs. Hitting some PRs at times on lifts that you've been doing for a long time and you haven't been hitting PRs maybe for a year or something like that, that's an amazing sign. Like, that's one of the best signs that amazing things are happening, because neurologically, as far as your nervous system is concerned, you were adapted to that lift already. So more than likely what's happening now is that it's actually getting bigger. There are structural changes to that muscle, and that's why it's stronger. So if you're seeing things like this, that's amazing. And I think that there is a bit of a lost art now with all the sciencey talks, that we just fail at times too much at being progression oriented in our thinking. I think we should be pursuing PRs. I think there is something to that, you know, dumb meathead mentality where I don't care how, but I'm gonna get that PR. I think that is needed to some extent to train the nervous system to get used to heavier weights. Don't just go by feel. Don't just go by, well, like, the muscles don't know weight. They don't know tension. That's true. However, there is just some magic of lifting heavier and heavier weights. Later on, once you hit that weight once, it will be easier to return to that. There is just a bigger stimulus that you're getting over time if you're pursuing those heavier weights. I really love the way Jeffrey Verity Schofield is training. Like, I love the dedication, and I love that I just see that fire in his eyes and that determination to chase those heavier weights within limits, you know, within reason, of course, but the mindset is there. And then, you know, you use your conservatism when it's needed, you know, not letting form break down completely and things like that. So anyways, there's a lot to say on that. I should make more videos on this whole progressive overload thing. But anyway, yes, so be progression oriented and make sure that your training is improving and going well. Okay, next thing is, I won't spend too much time on this because I talked quite a bit about this in the beginning, but being in your ideal body fat percentage range. Yes, being in a surplus is great. Gaining weight is great. But I think there is a difference between being at 8% body fat, where you killed yourself to diet down to, and let's say 12% body fat, which maybe you don't have to kill yourself to get down to, but it's still quite lean, very lean in fact. Being in that body fat percentage range and being at, let's say, like 15%, where you could maintain easily, and let's say 20%, which might be a little bit over where you feel your best, there's a big difference. I think the latter would be much more productive if you're bulking there. It's gonna be different for everybody. For me, it is probably ironically actually that range that I just mentioned, but there are people who are probably closer to like 10% to 15%. Maybe there are actually some people that are in that 8% to 12% range. You will have to find that over time, what that is for you. There are subtle but telltale signs of your body that will help you figure this out. Once you do that, I think that's the range where you should be sticking in. Oftentimes you won't actually know whether you're in this range or outside of this range, and if you're outside of it, by how much while you're there. But once, let's say, you start gaining weight, you realize that, oh my God, I'm feeling better. Oh my God, I'm still better. Wow, like, was I feeling this bad? You will find that range where you feel the most productive, the most robust, strong, you recover well, you sleep well, your mood is good. All of those things which, you know, go for decent well-being. Once you find that, I recommend that you stay in that range. It's not to say that you cannot make progress outside of that range, but muscle building, productive muscle building, is not a shredded man's game. It's just how it is. If you want to argue with me about this, go ahead, but you will always be right, because I cannot know exactly what's best for you. If for you, you know, 10 to 15% body fat or 8 to 12% is the range to be, then stay in that range. I think that for most people, that's not going to be the case. I think that there is power in going a bit higher in body fat if you're interested in max muscle building. So I say embrace the bulk, and also, you know, hear out other people about this. I visited higher body weights than I've really ever been before now in the last couple of months. And I mean, I can tell you that the PRs that I'm hitting are incredible. And I have spoken with other people that have similar experiences. It's not going to last forever. Like, of course, like, there are diminishing returns to everything, for one. And secondly, I mean, eventually you kind of cap out no matter what. But especially if you haven't done bulks up to, you know, higher body fat percentages, then I think there is value in that. Stay in that body fat percentage range where you feel the best if you want to build muscle. If you mainly just want to stay lean and some muscle building as a bonus could be cool, then of course, stay leaner. Anyways, very, very important. Definitely not to be neglected. Let's see what's next. Okay, so the last thing, it's kind of a funny one at this point because it's so obvious, but gaining weight. Okay, so let's just never forget that if you're bulking, Like no matter what kind of an approach you're subscribing to, whether you agree with me on the fact that going higher in body fat can be beneficial for building muscle, whether you agree with me on the fact that, you know, 1 kilo-ish of weight gain is probably a pretty good thing for most people, even for smaller people, you might not agree with me on that, and I won't call you an idiot for that, because I think there are justifiable reasons to not agree with me on this. But gaining body weight is pretty non-negotiable, I'd say, okay? So you will have to have some pretty funky ideas if you think that you can somehow hack the system and actually not gain weight, or like recomp into a higher muscularity. Sorry, a bit of a camera angle change again. Lizzie arrived here in the meantime. So I was just saying that I know that there are people on the internet who say that they accomplished all of this without gaining weight. My answer to that is recomping is possible. However, I want you to consider this. For one, were you actually there while they were doing all of this, or you just saw some before and after photos? Because that's different. Secondly, is their situation, training age, body fat percentage, whatever else, applicable to you? Are they in the same boat? And thirdly, even if the answer to those things is yes, I'm not saying that you cannot get good results while recomping. Some people can even get good results if they are lean and if they are relatively advanced. Like, some people can accomplish really phenomenal things. However, I think even most of those people who claim that they achieved amazing results while recomping would tell you that they could have gained more muscle if they bulked. Some of them won't say that, and I will say that those people are either clueless or they are just full of shit. If you're gonna gain a lot of muscle, usually that will be accompanied by the cool side effect of also gaining weight. Maybe for some of you, that's not a cool side effect, but there's just too much evidence, too much logic, too much anecdotes for too many decades to say otherwise. Muscle is gonna be built the most efficiently when you're gaining weight. So I would say that that's so well established that I don't even really think that's controversial, luckily. So yeah, folks, I think I'm going to wrap this up here because we have concluded our tier list. I hope that this was informative. I recorded for an ungodly amount of time, so let's just shut it down. Please check out the show description for information on how you can work together with me in a coaching or consultation or other types of setups. And otherwise, please like the video if you liked it, subscribe for more content like this, and of course, drop a comment in the comment section and let me know what you thought of all of this. With that, I'm gonna be wrapping up for now, and I will see you in the next video. Ciao.